I want to start today with a number that, when I first saw it, it just didn't quite make sense.
Oh, yeah.
$8.3 billion. That is the projected size of a specific global tech market by 2030.
Which is a healthy number, for sure.
It is. But the growth rate is what really got me. Over 20%, year over year.
Right.
Usually when we see a curve that steep, we're talking about, you know, AI or something like that.
Yeah.
We aren't usually talking about a component that just looks like a big battery and sits inside a wind turbine.
No, it's not the sexiest technology on the surface. But if you look at the sources we've pulled for this deep dive, you realize that number, that 8.3 billion, it's a signal.
A signal of what?
It's signaling a huge shift in how we think about energy.
We are talking, of course, about the supercapacitor.
Yeah.
Or ultracapacitor, or I guess EDLC if you want to be technical.
They're all the same thing, yeah.
And the whole premise of this deep dive is, well, we spend all our time talking about lithium-ion batteries. They get all the headlines.
And to be fair, they get a lot of the criticism, too.
Right. But sitting right there next to them is this other device. One of the sources called it the unsung hero of the energy transition.
I like that.
So our mission today is to figure out why this tech is suddenly popping up everywhere. From an Intel factory to a bus in Sweden.
And to do that, we have to change how we think about storage. Because for a decade, the whole conversation has been about capacity.
How much can I hold?
Exactly. How much energy? That's the battery conversation. The supercapacitor conversation is totally different. It's not about how much. It's about how fast.
Speed versus capacity.
It's the difference between a reservoir and a fire hose.
Okay, so before we get into the use cases, which are pretty wild,
what?
We have to nail down the science.
I do.
Because to me, before I read these papers, a battery and a capacitor look like they did the exact same thing. You put electricity in, you take it back out. What is physically happening inside that makes them so different?
It really just comes down to one thing. Chemistry versus physics. That's the core distinction.
Yeah.
A battery, like the one in your phone, is a chemical device. It relies on what's called a Faradaic process.
Faradaic. Can you define that for us just briefly?
It just means there's a chemical reaction happening. Ions have to physically move from one side to the other and actually embed themselves into the material.
Right.
Think of it like a parking garage. You're an ion. You have to drive in, find a spot, back in, turn off the engine. It takes time.
And you can't rush it. If everyone tries to leave the garage at once, you get a traffic jam.
You get a traffic jam, and that jam creates heat, which causes degradation. It's why your phone gets hot when you fast charge it. The chemistry is physically wearing out the structure of the garage.
Okay, so that's the battery, the chemical parking garage. What's the supercapacitor doing?
The supercapacitor is electrostatic, no chemical reaction at all, no bonding.
So it's physics.
Pure physics. It uses something called the electric double layer.
I like the analogy in the sources for this one, the electrical sandwich.
It's a great visual. You have two electrodes, usually made of activated carbon. And this isn't just any carbon. It's unbelievably porous.
The numbers on this were just mind-bending.
They are. A single gram of this stuff has a surface area of up to 2,000 square meters.
Hold on. 1 gram, that's what, like a teaspoon of powder with the surface area of a huge house?
Precisely. So you have these two massive surface area electrodes, a separator between them, and it's all soaked in an electrolyte. That's your sandwich. When you apply a charge, the ions just cling to the surface of the carbon.
They don't park inside the garage.
They just stick to the outside walls. It's like static electricity on a balloon. So because they're just clinging there, they can let go instantly.
Instantly. No chemical dawn to break.
Nothing. You can dump the entire energy load in milliseconds.
Which brings us to that sprinter versus marathon runner analogy that was all over the research.
It's the best way to think about it.
Mm.
The battery is the marathon runner. It has high energy density. We're talking 150 to 250 watt hours per kilogram. It can go for hours and hours, but it paces itself. It's slow.
And the supercapacitor is the sprinter.
Exactly. High power density. Up to 20,000 watts per kilogram. It explodes off the line. But, and this is key, it has low energy density. Maybe only 5 to 40 watt hours per kilogram.
It runs out of breath really fast.
Very fast.
But there's another part of this analogy that I think is critical for the economics of it. Marathon runners, you know, they get tired. Their joints wear out.
Right. Batteries last, what, 500 to maybe 3,000 cycles?
So 5-10 years if you're lucky.
If you're lucky. But the sprinter.
And the sprinter.
Because it's just physics. There's no real wear and tear on a molecular level. It doesn't age in the same way. It can handle over 1 million charge and discharge cycles.
A million.
That's, yeah.
That's hard to wrap your head around.
You can cycle it every single day for 30 years and it will still perform. Yeah. It's a sprinter that just never gets old.
That longevity seems to be the pivot point. That's where this thing moves from being a cool science experiment to a vital industrial component.
Yeah.
Because companies hate replacing things.
They despise it. It's all about operating expense. And this is where we need to talk about where this sprinter is actually being used, because it's probably not in your pocket yet.
Right.
It's in places you don't see, doing jobs that need that split-second timing.
Let's talk factories. The sources kept mentioning power quality and voltage sags. To me, a power outage is when the lights go out for an hour. But for a high-tech factory, it's totally different, isn't it?
Completely different. For a semiconductor fab, a power outage isn't the lights going out. It's a voltage sag. The power just dips by 10% for maybe 20 milliseconds.
20 milliseconds. That's literally faster than the blink of an eye.
Way faster. But for a machine making a silicon wafer, that tiny dip is a catastrophe. You could ruin an entire batch of microchips.
You're talking millions of dollars of product.
Millions. Yeah. Gone in a fraction of a second.
So you'd usually have a UPS, an uninterruptible power supply, for that.
Yeah.
I have one for my computer. Why doesn't a standard battery UPS work for Intel?
It's that speed thing again. A chemical battery takes time to react. The switchover from grid power to battery power takes about 20 to 50 milliseconds.
Which, for my computer, is fine, but for the fab,
it's an eternity. The damage is already done. The battery is too slow to catch the falling knife.
So what's the solution?
Facilities like Intel's Fab 32 in Arizona use supercapacitor-based UPS systems. A supercap can discharge its power in under 5 milliseconds. Oh. It perfectly bridges that tiny gap until the big diesel generators can spin up or the grid stabilizes.
It's an insurance policy that works at the speed of light.
Yeah.
But there was another industrial use I found even more compelling. It's not just about disaster prevention. It's about actively saving money. Peak shaving.
Yes. This is a huge deal for heavy industry. Your electricity bill as a homeowner is simple. You pay for what you use.
Right.
Industrial clients get charged for capacity. Their rate is set by their highest usage peak during the month.
So if you turn on every machine in the factory at 9 a.m. on a Monday, and your power spikes for just 10 minutes.
You pay a massive premium for that capacity for the entire month, even if you never hit that peak again.
That feels like a trap.
It's how the grid manages load. But the supercapacitor is the loophole.
Yeah.
You charge the supercaps at night when power is cheap.
And then when you hit that morning peak.
The supercapacitors dump their energy to handle the spike. You basically chop the top off the mountain. The grid never sees the spike, so you never get charged for it.
The case study on this was pretty amazing.
The one from AES Energy Storage? They put a 2-megawatt system into a plant in California. Just by shaving that peak or by 400 kilowatts, they saved that plant $180,000 a year.
$180,000?
Yeah.
Every year. And these things last 20, 30 years.
So you're talking millions in savings. And unlike a battery system, you're not replacing it every 5 years. It's a set-it-and-forget-it money-saving machine.
Okay, so factories make perfect sense. But I don't own a factory. I drive a car. And this is where the sources got really interesting for me. The tech is moving into transportation.
The braking problem. This is the killer app for supercapacitors.
Walk us through this. Because in my head, when you brake, you're just stopping energy.
You're stopping motion, but that energy has to go somewhere. In a normal gas car, it's just converted into heat by your brake pads and wasted.
Which is incredibly inefficient.
It's terrible. Now, electric cars have regenerative braking. The motor runs in reverse and pushes energy back into the battery.
Right. You see the little green bar on the dash?
You do. But there's a catch. Braking is a really violent, fast event. You generate this huge surge of electricity in seconds. Remember the parking garage analogy?
The ions can't park that fast.
Exactly. A lithium-ion battery chokes on that surge. It can only absorb maybe 40 to 60% of that braking energy.
So you're still wasting almost half of it.
Unless you have a supercapacitor, the sprinter. It can take that massive surge of current instantly. It captures 80 to 90% of the braking energy.
The example of this that really stood out was the public transit system. Volvo buses.
The Gothenburg Sweden pilot. It's the perfect use case. Think about a city bus. Stop, go, stop, go.
It's the worst possible job for a marathon runner battery.
But it's perfect for a sprinter. So Volvo puts supercapacitors in these hybrid buses. Every time the bus stops, the supercap sucks up all that kinetic energy in 2 or 3 seconds. Then, when the light turns green, it dumps that energy back into the motor to get the bus moving.
So the diesel engine doesn't have to do the really hard work.
Precisely.
Right.
And the results were staggering. A 25% reduction in fuel use. But here's the kicker. After 8 years and over 500,000 stop-start cycles, the supercapacitors still had 95% of their original capacity.
If you had used a standard battery for that?
You would have replaced it 3, maybe 4 times. The maintenance cost would have just eaten all the fuel savings.
It's funny. We think of high tech as being delicate. But these things seem to thrive where it's rough. Buses, factories, and I guess racing.
The ultimate testing ground. Formula E Le Mans.
I was reading about the Toyota TS050 hybrid. They use supercapacitors not for efficiency, but for pure aggression.
It's the push-to-pass button. The Toyota system stores 8 megajoules of energy from braking. When the driver needs to overtake, they hit a button, and the supercapacitor dumps it all. It gives them a 500-horsepower boost.
500 horsepower? That's insane.
And a battery just could not do that. If you tried to pull 500 horsepower out of a battery that quickly, you'd probably melt it. Only electrostatics can release power that fast.
And we're seeing a tamer version of this in consumer cars too, right? With Mazda.
Right. The IE Lupus system. It just catches some braking energy to run the car's electronics, like the AC and the radio. Takes the load off the engine. Simple, but it saves about 10% on fuel.
So we've got speed, we've got durability. But there's another tough environment we need to cover. The actual environment. Weather.
Yeah, batteries are. They're Goldilocks devices. They like to be about 70 degrees. Too cold, the chemistry slows down. Too hot, it degrades or, you know, catches fire.
But supercapacitors are different.
Much more robust. They operate just fine from negative 40 Celsius all the way up to plus 70 Celsius.
Which explains why they're being used in space. The Iridium NXT satellites.
Space is the absolute worst. You're going from minus 100 degrees C in shadow to plus 100 degrees C in direct sunlight every 90 minutes.
The battery would never survive that.
Not without heavy, power-hungry heating and cooling systems. Supercapacitors just work. They don't need the babying.
So they handle extreme temperatures. They handle power spikes. This brings us to the grid. We all want renewables, wind and solar, but they're inconsistent.
Intermittency. It's the biggest enemy of a stable power grid. The grid has a heartbeat, a frequency. If that heartbeat fluctuates, things break.
So how do supercapacitors fix the wind?
They're a shock absorber. At the Horns Rev 3 wind farm in Denmark, they have a massive supercapacitor bank. When a gust of wind hits, power spikes. The supercap absorbs the excess. When the wind dies for a second, the supercap fills the gap.
It smooths the jagged line into a nice, clean curve.
Exactly. It gives the grid stability. It buys the grid those crucial seconds it needs to adjust other power sources so your lights don't flicker every time a cloud passes over a solar farm.
Okay, I want to pivot now to the question I know is on every listener's mind. We've talked about buses, race cars, satellites. But where is my supercapacitor? Why am I still charging my phone for 2 hours?
Well, you might actually have one and not know it. You've seen those shake-to-charge flashlights, right?
Yeah, the emergency ones that last forever.
That's a supercapacitor. Or there was that Casio camera a few years ago that could charge in 3 minutes.
But that's niche stuff. Why isn't it in my iPhone? Or my Tesla?
This is the elephant in the room. The reason batteries still dominate. And it's one thing. Energy density.
The bucket just isn't big enough.
Remember, a battery is 150 to 250 watt-hours per kilogram. A supercapacitor today is maybe 10 to 20.
Oh, wow.
If you wanted to power a Tesla for 300 miles on supercapacitors alone, the pack would be bigger than the car.
So you can fill it instantly, but it doesn't hold much.
And it's expensive, up front at least. A lithium-ion battery is, what, $100 to $150 per kilowatt-hour? A supercapacitor can be $10,000 to $20,000 per kilowatt hour.
Ouch. That's a huge difference.
If you're only looking at capacity for the price, batteries win hands down. That's why your phone has a battery. You care about it lasting all day, not about it lasting 20 years.
And the sources were hinting at this. That gap is closing. There's some serious material science working on that density problem.
It is. This is where the hype might actually be justified. And the key is graphene.
Of course it is. Graphene seems to be the answer to everything these days.
It often is. A company called Skeleton Technologies is using what they call curved graphene. It lets them structure that porous carbon at an atomic level to keep all that surface area accessible.
And what does that do to the numbers?
They're achieving energy densities of 60 watt hours per kilogram.
60. So we've gone from 10 up to 60. That's creeping into the range of old lead-acid batteries.
It is. It's significant. The bucket is getting bigger. We're also seeing flexible printed supercapacitors. Imagine one printed right onto the fabric of your jacket.
And I saw a mention of self-healing polymers.
Yeah, materials that can repair micro damage. That could push the life from 1 million cycles to 2 million. It basically becomes immortal.
So what's the end game here? Do supercapacitors eventually kill the battery? Do I get a car I can charge in 10 seconds?
I don't think it's a war where one kills the other. I think the future is a partnership. A hybrid.
The best of both worlds.
Exactly. Imagine an EV. It has a main battery pack, the marathon runner, for cruising, but it also has a small supercapacitor pack, the sprinter.
So when I stomp on the gas, the supercapacitor fires. When I slam on the brakes, the supercapacitor absorbs it.
Precisely. The supercapacitor becomes a bodyguard for the battery. It shields it from the harsh spikes, which means the battery doesn't degrade as fast. Suddenly, your EV battery doesn't last 8 years. It lasts 15 or 20.
And you get the instant performance of the supercap with the long range of the battery.
That's the holy grail. We're moving to a world of power architecture, not just energy storage. It's about using the right tool for the job. You don't use a hammer for a screw.
It really changes the whole psychology of energy.
Yeah.
You mentioned something before we started recording about invisible charging. Can you unpack that?
It's a concept that I find really exciting. Right now, charging is an event. You plan around it. I need to find a charger.
It's battery anxiety. It drives everyone nuts.
But with supercapacitors, because charging is so fast seconds, not hours charging could become irrelevant. Imagine a bus that gets a 10-second charge at every single stop. It never effectively runs out. It never has to go out of service.
Or a warehouse robot that gets a top-up every time it drops off a package.
Exactly. If you can charge a device in the time it takes to tie your shoe, charging stops being an activity you have to think about. It just becomes part of the background noise. Energy becomes fluid.
That is a fascinating shift. It's not just better tech. It's a whole different relationship with our devices. It feels like moving from a world where we hoard energy to a world where we just sip it whenever we need to.
That's it, exactly. We stop worrying about the tank being empty because filling it takes no time at all.
Well, I am definitely going to look at my brake pedal a little differently next time I'm in traffic. It's not just stopping. It's a missed opportunity.
It's energy just waiting to be captured.
This has been a fantastic look into the electrical sandwich. Thanks for helping us peel back all the layers.
My pleasure.
And to our listener, thanks for diving in with us. Next time you see an electric bus glide by, remember the sprinter sitting inside, making it all happen. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.